Welcome back to the Content That Grows podcast. I'm your host, Nate Turner, and today we are going to be talking about the 7 most common technical SEO issues. So we get to see a lot of different things working across a number of clients, many in B2B and SaaS, and there's a lot of things that just are pretty common across most companies, and so we wanted to dive in and kind of cover those today and be helpful if we can. So I'm going to be chatting through this today with my co-founder, Kevin King. What's up, Kevin?
Not much. How you doing, Nate?
Doing well. All right. So just to jump right in, we've got 7 of the most common. And then at the end, we actually have a bonus 3 that are less common. One of them can be pretty important if you are a SaaS company with a web application. So be sure to check that one out, either skip ahead or wait around for it. So first one, a kind of broad category, we'll cover a number of things in here. Website is too slow.
Yeah, it's probably the biggest one that we encounter all the time, even when we, you know, talk to potential prospective clients, is when we look at the website, you know, we can quickly get a good sense of, it's one of the first things we check is ultimately like the core web vitals metrics, some of the things that impact the user experience, which is ultimately like page speed. So yeah, we see it all the time. Rarely do we encounter a website that is actually properly optimized and like from the get-go. But within that, again, specifically its core web vitals metrics. So the 3 of those things being the largest contentful paint, the interaction to next paint, which is actually newer. They just changed that from the first contentful paint. And visual stability, which is the cumulative layout shift. I always marble mouth that one. All 3 of those are really important. LCP and CLS actually come up the most when we run page speed insights, yeah. But those are the things I think to like really drill into when you start to look at some of the stuff in Core Web Vitals.
Yep. Cool. Yeah, and then I think you know, the other big things we see, and these, you know, ultimately are kind of factors that get rolled into those Core Web Vitals, but like 2 of the most common are just like images and media assets on the site that are not compressed, so they're just much too large, and that impacts performance, as well as just excessive JavaScript or certain scripts that actually hold up the loading of everything else behind it. So ideally things are asynchronous and loading in an order that's optimal for the user experience, but sometimes things get moved around or legacy things there that just kind of end up creating some issues around there and cause some pretty slow page loads.
Yeah, images definitely are the biggest thing that we see as it relates to those few metrics with Core Web Vitals. If anything, it's the biggest thing. Like if you're looking at a blog, it's always like the featured image, you know, that always ends up being like the thing that actually impacts page speed across a very large number of URLs on the site.
Yeah. And I had a weird experience. I can't remember. I don't know if you'll remember, but there was a client that had a button in their top nav, like their global nav, that would open up a talk to sales modal. Like it was kind of like a drop down from the nav, and inside of there was just a very small picture of someone from the team, just like a kind of woman's headshot there to kind of like just personalize the form a little bit. And it turned out that image was huge. I mean, it was like, I don't remember what the file size, but it, like when you actually open the image, even though it displayed small, it was, you know, like a 6,000 by 8,000 pixels or something, you know, just like a huge image. And so that was hanging up. It was in the top nav. So it was every single page, that image was impacting page load and performance and just some weird stuff that can come through like that.
Yeah, there's always with anything core page speed related, there can always be some like random thing that got implemented that is really dragging on the site like that. I've seen that a lot. CTAs being one of them too.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Number 2 is that the website is not mobile friendly.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. A couple of years ago, Google officially went 100% mobile first index, meaning they are prioritizing the mobile version, or what they see as the mobile version of the site. And like, obviously nowadays your site is responsive, right? So like this, the, you're not creating two sites. Remember back in the day there used to be a mobile site, right? And so like right now it's really critical to make sure that, like, obviously not only is the desktop experience up to par, but the mobile experience is actually something that you should prioritize, because that's what they're actually like judging you on. So there's a lot of things that go into that too, which goes back to the page speed stuff with Core Web Vitals. But ultimately just thinking about how the content is laid out on a mobile device, and that experience ultimately is satisfying. And there's a number of ways that they judge that, of course, but which you can talk about forever. But ultimately the high level is that, like, make sure that user experience and all those elements like images, text, CTAs and everything is really readable and easy to interact with.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the interaction part is definitely a big one. It can be easy to have not realize the mobile, you know, nav, when you hit the little hamburger icon, then all of a sudden it opens into a weird unusable way, or people get stuck, or your GDPR consent thing takes over the screen and the, you know, button doesn't work, or the cancel out or whatever. There's all kinds of, you know, promotional discount type things pop up. So yeah, I think that's definitely a big one. And I think that the key thing there that I would want to call out is, yes, like, they have shifted to 100% mobile first on the indexing side and how they look at it. But I do feel that, you know, most web design agencies still design desktop first. In-house designers at companies are, you know, well, we're going to design this for the desktop. And then mobile is either like the afterthought, like we'll let the devs figure that out, or just kind of a quick last minute design. And so I get it, because I think that's still an important use case, and especially B2B, like, people are going to be using computers a lot. But but I think culturally within companies, there's still a pretty big disconnect into where the priority lies for, like, the design and development being desktop first, whereas performance is mobile first. So just important, you know, if you're, hey, this year or next year, we've got this slot that we're going to do a redesign, whatever, like, just take that into consideration. Make sure you build in time and consideration for mobile first to make sure that it's going to be mobile friendly.
Yep. Yeah.
Cool. Number three, big one, indexation issues. So a number of things we'll want to cover here. I'll let you go ahead and kick it off with the first one or two.
Yeah. I think the big, number one on the list to look at is like canonicalization. It's a simple thing, right? Making sure that you have a self-referencing canonical. And also taking a step back, indexation being that, like, your site is having literal indexing issues. Google Search Console is telling you that, like, it's not indexed, right? You can check that manually. You can get a report. There's an indexation report. So you can obviously understand exactly what's going on there, but usually the things that lead into it are canonicalization, a poorly optimized sitemap or missing sitemap, or a sitemap that's not getting updated frequently. Those are three actually, like, common things that happen with a sitemap. I would start there if you're ever having indexing issues. Actually kind of freestyling on this a little bit, but like the Core Web Vitals stuff also can impact that too. So, like, a lot of these things are connected. If you don't have a good user experience, like, Google just might not index it. Of course, the robots.txt, having that well optimized, especially on the larger sites, very, very, very big, like, even e-commerce sites, especially, or like two-sided marketplace websites, that's a really big thing there to have a properly optimized robots.txt. I'd say those are like the big three: canonicalization, sitemap, and robots.
Yep. And I would say probably like honorable mention. I don't think it even makes sense to be a less common, but like mostly just because it's become far less frequent. We used to see a lot more issues with like HT access and the HTTPS aspects of URLs and security and whatnot. And so sometimes we would have find issues where like both secure and non-secure versions of the site were indexed, or things around HTTPS. But I feel like that protocol has been forced essentially in the default for long enough now that we're seeing less and less of that, but could potentially still be kind of a factor in there. And then I just wanted to call out on the sitemap aspect of it. You know, that's a big thing. You know, we talked about like issues that happen when you migrate to a new CMS. That was a recent episode that we did. And we talked about, you know, in like the canonicalization being different and how that's done with Webflow. And then like, if you're moving from WordPress to something else, like you probably have a plugin that you're handling sitemaps on WordPress, and then you move to another CMS. And so like, there's definitely some interconnectedness there, or just like this moving to the CMS could be the trigger, but you may have someone before you in your role or whatever may have moved to a new CMS a year ago, year and a half ago, and it just, you know, something you inherited or whatever. Like it's worth kind of digging in to make sure, are the site maps actually, you know, being fully represented? Is there the right things being submitted? Are they, you know, successful within Search Console? All that stuff is worth digging into, because it's always easy to like kind of do it from the beginning if you're building from scratch, but when you start a new role and inherit something, or you know, just whatever, just join after things were done by someone else, then sometimes that's where you can have some issues and need to just kind of look back, because it looks like it's fine, but it's actually not.
Yep.
Cool. So number four, I think is definitely a big one, and that's site structure. So I guess, you know, maybe to clarify, when we were saying most common technical SEO issues, like the site structure itself may not be the issue, but it is sort of the way it's set up and the way you're handling things are kind of ultimately causing some of the issues. So I'll let you kind of jump into some of the things we typically see there.
One of the big things that we're really getting at with that is that like you want to basically have a solid site structure that search engines can crawl, or any bot can crawl, in an intuitive way. So that's why it's important, I guess, to have a strong site structure that's clean. There's a lot of things that go into that, which one of them being like a really well-constructed navigation, because that's going to be on every page of the site, and it's going to tell people exactly how to get through the site. So it's like not only for bots, it's a user experience thing. And you want that to be intuitive, and you don't want to have too many layers or levels deep, right? Because the farther down pages are from the homepage, that becomes an issue and all that, which is actually an internal linking thing, which we'll, I know, touch on because it's a technical issue. But those are probably the two bigger things like people should keep in mind when it comes to a common technical issue as related to site structure.
Yeah, and I think the, you know, we're talking about crawl optimization. Like, there's a concept of crawl budget, which is essentially, you know, not every website gets the same amount of attention, and search engines don't spend the same amount of time crawling every website. So there's a essentially a budget being allocated, which you have no visibility into really what that looks like anymore. There used to be some kind of proxy signals, but so the idea is like, you don't want the crawler to go off in some weird direction and not spend time crawling your most important pages, or your most and or your most frequently updated pages. And so it's important to remember that like, not the crawlers don't always come through the homepage, you know, so they're following links from other sites and whatnot into yours. And so for example, just to be very specific, if they kind of come in through a blog post, your ideal would be that they kind of follow through there into, you know, other blog posts and other critical pages on your website. But if they kind of get into this weird rut where they, you know, all of a sudden they're going down like 45 pages of results for a category or a tag or something like that, where it's like it just ends up going way down that path versus kind of getting to the core pages essentially. So I think that's a, you know, a big one, and there's a lot of aspects. We'll kind of shift now into the next point, which is internal linking. So internal linking is a big part of that, and just some of the different ways that you kind of shape your site structure and control some of the way that they crawl and index your site.
Yeah.
And the internal linking now.
Yeah, there's overlap with the site structure stuff for sure. One of the things, again, being that navigation, that's a really great way to optimize your internal linking. And to be clear, like, the issues that stem from internal linking is, again, related to crawling, people not knowing how to navigate the site. There's a relevancy and authority aspect to it when it comes to, like, how you structure the internal linking around content, which is, like, topic clusters, right? If we're familiar with that concept, which I know we've talked about a bit. Yeah, like, it ultimately, that's a strategic thing that needs to be optimized at the end of the day. And going back to even the crawl optimization stuff, like, you can, I really recommend people, even if you have a small site, like, pull your crawl logs and take a look at them, because it'll give you a good sense of, like, how Google and any bot actually is crawling your website, especially on the big sites. That's really important. But even at the small sites, I think you can get some really interesting insights to see, like, oh, they're Google's like crawling this page like this many times, and that's not an important page, to your point earlier. It's really, really, really powerful stuff if you know how to get the data and then ultimately optimize around it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the ultimate goal really is for your internal linking to reflect priority, you know? So we want to make sure that it's your way to control and give signals and say, hey, there are a lot of links we've pointed to this page or these pages on our site because they're important. That is a signal as the search engine's crawling. And so I think, yeah, the issues, you know, the tying it back to the issue specifically would be that a lot of times the internal linking is just missing a lot of that. And so it's not actually reflecting a priority and kind of shaping that to give those signals to the search engines.
Which is why it's super important to really, really think through your header and footer navigations, because that's the most clear signal of priority for a majority of sites. And that's why when you see the ones gaming the footer with a million links at the bottom, it's not necessarily priority.
Right. Correct. And it's, I think we talked about it maybe in a previous episode around, like, the elements of the content brief and why they're important. But that's a big part of why we also make it a point in any piece of content we're creating to make sure we're looking for and calling out the internal links to be built from that piece as well as to that piece. And that just helps avoid a situation where it has to be like, oh, over time we've built this to where it's very outdated and now we have to go back and do this big internal linking project. We want to be building them correctly over time and letting those signals be building up over time. So definitely a one way to help, because that's going to be typically content creation, blog content and guides and other stuff is going to be your number one place where, like, this website's growing. You only have one homepage, you're only gonna have so many feature pages or solution pages, but that's the content side is typically where it's going to be growing. And so that's your biggest opportunity to stay on top of it and be proactive with building those. All right, number six, schema markup is improperly implemented or missing.
Yeah, pretty straightforward one. A lot of websites still not capitalizing on the opportunity to implement schema. So that's just kind of really common, or they're just using the markup for whatever page they might be having or what they're trying to imply to search engines there. So, I mean, again, really straightforward there. Just make sure that you are leveraging schema whenever you can. There's tons of different types of markup, and you can always go check out that really easily. And plenty of plugins, tools too, that will just like easily generate it for you, tell you how to implement it. So regardless of your CMS, but yeah, usually it's either not there or just you got the wrong markup implemented.
Yep. And the like protocol for the markup does change sometimes too. So like, even if you're like, cool, I did it, it's done.
Right.
It can change, in which case then you are, you know, that's where you end up with the improperly implemented potentially. As well as, you know, just what we said before, site redesign or moving to a new CMS, like some of these like bigger events, some of these things can kind of not be at the forefront of your mind or developers' minds. And like, so you may just stay on the same CMS, redesign the website, but when that new website's developed, some of that schema markup is done incorrectly or is left out. And so all kinds of things that it's just a living, breathing thing that can get messed up over time. And lastly, number seven, and then we'll, after this, we'll jump into the less common, is duplicate or similar content.
Yeah, it's really just having a lot of what it sounds like, duplicate or similar content. Basically like pages that are carbon copies of each other with like barely any change in text. And that happens a lot with, you know, like local pages to some extent, if you have a local mm-hmm. strategy. And then there's just, you know, sometimes over time, you create a lot of content and you talk about topics and kind of maybe revisit one from like a similar angle. Yep. And that tends to then kind of get things screwed up in terms of like what Google thinks is priority, because maybe they're really, really similar. So then you start to lose impressions and rankings and clicks and all that. And like, you're going to want to revisit that, consolidate, get rid of one, and then, you know, redirect and all that. There's a lot of technical stuff that comes with it. So I want to clarify that, because it sounds like content being duplicate isn't like technical, but there's a lot of technical things that go into it ultimately to fix it. But, yep. It's kind of like, legacy tech debt or content tech debt to some extent, if I'm making up a phrase to describe it.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you hit on the, just over time creating more content and end up kind of talking about things in a very similar way, because that's definitely the sneaky one. You know, I think everyone at this point pretty well knows, like, I shouldn't go out and just create nearly identical pages. But it's some of those where it's like, well, ultimately, yes, this is our positioning. This is how we talk about the product. And, you know, that starts to get referenced over time. Or you just have different writers that say, oh, wow, I love the way they described it in this, you know, Help Center article. I'm going to just pull some of that copy in or whatever. Like, some of those things can just kind of add up over time accidentally. So I'm glad you called that out. And I think the other thing there is just there's... with the rise of some of the like programmatic content, it's just another thing to be mindful of. That's probably one area where some of the newer tactics around that could, you know, if not done correctly, could end up accidentally building into that a bit. So, as well as like AI content, if you're,
that's what I was just going to say. Yes. Probably AI content.
Can't imagine there's a lot of people still doing this. Like there was at the beginning of last year, but if you're just letting AI just churn out the content without any sort of detailed prompting or human editing, and even human editing, I think over time would just be hard for an editor to really catch how much of that's being talked about in the same way. But you definitely have a higher propensity to have AI spit out very, very similar or the same description of something that's going to cause that. So, like I said, I don't think anyone's sitting down to do it on purpose, but there are still a few different ways it can happen, and then certainly some newer tactics that might be leading to that as well.
Yep.
All right, so we'll jump into three quick of the less common ones that we see, to give it ultimately a nice round 10 number. before we do that, just want to call out, you know, if you're having quite a few issues around, you know, on-site and technical SEO issues, that is definitely an area where we help clients, can do an audit that kind of covers a lot of that. And then we, you know, read it back, give you prioritization, and kind of support how you can resolve some of those issues. So certainly reach out if that's something of interest. And then, all right, so the first less common, I'll let you take, is improper localization.
Yeah, you know, this the issues really stem, it's similar to kind of like schema markup in a sense, but like hreflang implementation, that not being properly implemented, URL structure, right? Like, it's actually kind of like a combination of a lot of the technical issues, or a bunch of the ones up top, kind of a la carte. That URL structure is not there. You're improperly canonicalizing a, you know, one language to another. There's a lot that goes into it, but ultimately, it can creep up if you have a big site and you do are trying to branch out into different, you know, countries and have that the website translated. You just have a lot of things that ultimately can go wrong with that implementation because it's kind of tricky, complicated to some extent.
Yeah, and just an area that a lot of people maybe haven't encountered in their career, so if they're in-house or whatever, just kind of dealing with that. And the reason we put it on the less common is just because not everyone is localized into multiple languages or doing something in that multi-region approach. So all right, so I'll take the next two. So like reverse proxy. So this is what I mentioned earlier around if you have a web application for your SaaS product, if the web application and the website are on the same domain, so it's not like you don't have like app dot whatever for your app, it's just all on the root domain. It's possible, we've definitely run into this, that it could have been set up where both are on the same domain and then a reverse proxy is used to actually display the website pages. And so it can work. It just creates some things that you need to be aware of. It can make certain like automatic building of and submitting of sitemap might be broken, or other things that you would traditionally be able to do with the URL or some of the like best practices that just kind of get disrupted because of the way that the reverse proxy works. So ideally, in most cases, the application could be on its own subdomain. At some point, there's a handoff from the website to the web application, which would allow to not have to use reverse proxy, but that's just a thing to keep an eye out for. And then lastly, it definitely plays into parts that we talked about with like page speed and different stuff. But again, just as a site grows, there can be a lot of legacy scripts, a lot of I've encountered a website before with like 15 or 16 different font files that were loading on every single page, even though most of them were no longer used. And just some different things like that that are worth, you know, doing some waterfall analysis. So run a page speed report from like web page test or any other tool like that, and look at the waterfall and see all the things that it just shows you every single thing loading, and go through and audit and ask if it's still necessary, and just kind of practice some good hygiene there, because that's not always going to really get called out in Core Web Vitals or some of the other tools, but it will still ultimately impact some of your technical performance. So anything to add on those last two, Kevin?
Just like keep a, you know, these are kind of, one of them is more legacy. So it's always just good to just make sure you're constantly staying on top of like keeping up a good house, like treat it like your house, keep things clean, organized. Don't let dust or fonts and scripts build up over time. And then, with the domain stuff, especially with a web app, because a lot of we see this a lot, is just like making sure that they're the line, dividing lines between the website and the app, if I'm kind of generalizing it a lot, are clear. So, you know, Google isn't necessarily getting into the app either, and goes back to a lot of the stuff we said earlier, but just making sure you optimize those things well, I'd say, is really super, super important, in the, especially in the SaaS space.
Yeah. All right. And then I think the last thing I want to just say before we wrap up is one of the bigger overarching challenges that we see with clients is that a lot of questions around prioritization and like dependency. So there's just like, do we need to not do any content marketing or put any effort into SEO until all of these are resolved, or you know, different conversations there? Because obviously the reality is that no website is, no matter how much you have people working on it, it's never going to turn back a completely clean record. I don't think that's a realistic expectation. And also, not everything holds the same weight and priority. And so I think in nearly every case, like if your company is taking a long, whatever, 5, 7, 10 year view on content marketing and like building up your authority and your presence and being a resource for your space, I don't typically think any of that should be held up in a way that is just depending on getting a bunch of technical stuff resolved before you start, because I think you can be building content, you can make progress while you're resolving the issues in tandem. In the only case would be if you're going to somehow have duplicated work or have to redo something. I wouldn't do that, but you know, ultimately I think that all kind of leads towards that. And then, you know, when you look back, you know, over a 7 year period, you're like, why? Yeah, I'm glad I didn't wait 6 months to start, because that wasn't necessary. We made good progress. We got the issues resolved, you know, performance picked up, like all that stuff. So that would be my only comment is, understand that, you know, everything that comes back from an audit, or if you do it yourself and crawl and look at sites, like don't weight everything the same. And tools are typically good at kind of helping you understand what's critical and what's a low priority, but don't weight it the same. And then just be realistic about, you know, kind of how you can do some of these things in tandem and still make progress on content marketing and building an audience and authority and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, similarly, and one thing I'll say, which kind of just popped in my head with that is, because it's a technical thing, and we did just do an episode on migrations, site migrations, is don't wait on the content if like you're replatforming, right? Because right. I think people do get like caught up on, hey, this is going to be a big technical lift, right? So let's pause on everything. Like, that is a very specific use case or specific scenario that we see all the time. Like, hey, we do want to do content, but we're going to be switching from, you know, I don't know, Storyblock to Webflow or WordPress to Webflow. And they're like, right. No, keep going. Don't wait. You can figure out all that stuff on the fly. Just have a plan.
Yeah, because one, if you're talking about blog posts that are intended to be optimized for search, you still have those ready to go. Like, so when you do move over to the new CMS, you're ready to load in and get going. You're not like then having to start from scratch on building content. And you know, we're always saying like organic search is one distribution channel. So like that content, you can still be like splicing it up and turning it into social content. You're obviously not going to point it back to the blog URL in any way, because that's not live, but there are different things that you can do and just kind of like take that work you've already done on the topic and turn it into other assets to keep driving your marketing forward in general, and then publish them when it's live. So totally agree. I think it's another good call out. So yeah, we've done recent episodes on the most common issues when you're migrating to new CMS. And we have this one, and then we're also going to be talking soon about content decay and some of that stuff that I think will be good as well, plus a host of other topics we've covered recently. So be sure to check out 10speed.io/podcast to catch those other episodes, and then like and subscribe on your platform of choice so you can get the upcoming episodes when they come out. with that, we'll wrap it up. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.